Chief Matapang caught up with the priest on the outskirts of Tumon Village. It was mid-morning. Hot, as it almost always is on Guam. Humid. Perhaps the priest was surprised to see Chief Matapang running after him, spear in hand. Or maybe he was prepared for this chief, for any chief, to take a violent and doomed stand against the church. At first, Chief Matapang and his people had welcomed the priest to their island. This gaunt foreigner in his long black cassock, with his holy oils and foreign god. Diego Luis de San Vitoris wasn't the first Spaniard to arrive on the shores of Guam, but no other visitor to their island in the Pacific had been so eager, so determined to stay. Chamorro chiefs and commoners alike converted by the hundreds on Guam, knelt willingly in humid jungles and on beaches alive with tiny crabs, while priests poured holy water on their heads and welcomed them into a new religion, a new world. But things eventually soured, as they usually do in stories like these. This new Christian world didn't have room for Chamorro ancestors, for fathers and mothers and grandmothers whose skulls stood watch from the rafters of Chamorro homes, guarding their family for generations. And so Chamorro chiefs like Matapang decided they didn't want anything to do with this new god. They didn't care that they'd already been baptized. Didn't want their children baptized either. On the day of the conflict, the day that would change Guam forever, San Vitoris journeyed to Tumon Village to baptize Chief Matapang's newborn daughter. Matapang told San Vitoris to leave, threatened to kill him. The priest didn't care. What value is a human life compared to eternal salvation? He waited until Matapang had walked away, and then he baptized the chief's daughter the way he had baptized so many other children, without permission. When Chief Matapang caught up with San Vitoris on the outskirts of the village, the conflict was violent and swift. The Spaniard kissed his crucifix. He braced himself for the end. An end that would symbolize the beginning of Guam's modern-day history. When the smoke cleared after more than 25 years of the Spanish Chamorro War, only a few thousand Chamorros were left standing. Nearly all of them had converted to Catholicism. For more than 300 years, the Catholic Church has been the most powerful institution on the island. An institution above question, above reproach. Until now.
My name is Roy Taitagui Quintanilla. I was sexually abused by Anthony Sablon Aperon 40 years ago.
More than 100 people are suing Guam's Catholic Church, saying they've been abused by priests for decades. Sex abuse within the Catholic Church is a well-known issue on the mainland. But this is the first time Guam has had to come to grips with it. And it's a huge deal. Not just because of the abuse, but because the outpouring of accusations is a sign of huge societal changes in Guam. A place where, after centuries of colonization, many people view Catholicism as an inextricable part of Chamorro culture. From Honolulu Civil Beat and PRX, this is Offshore, Stories from Hawaii. I'm Jessica Terrell. We're hard at work on season 3 of Offshore, but in the meantime, we're trying out something a little different, something we're calling Offshore Postcards. Single episode stories that start in Hawaii and the Pacific Rim, but reflect issues that resonate far beyond our island homes. Reporting for this episode was sponsored in part by the Pulitzer Center on Crisis Reporting. This is a story about the abuse cases, but it's also a story about the changing power of the Catholic Church on Guam, and a reporter who struggled for years to explain where she comes from and what it means to be Chamorro. Finding answers in some very unexpected places. Today, Tumon Bay is Guam's tourism district. A gorgeous sweeping beach lined with towering hotels. The water is warm and clear and sparkling. And in between hotels and popular restaurants is an often overlooked statue of San Vitoris and Chief Matapang.
In so many ways, San Vitoris won. Even though he died, he became a martyr, and that road along Tumon Bay is named after him. The reason why he's a saint is because Chamorro nuns and priests petitioned the Vatican to make him a saint. And so he's become somebody who, you know, people honor for having brought Catholicism to the islands.
That's Honolulu Civil Beat reporter Anita Hofschneider. Anita's from Saipan. Guam and Saipan are both part of the Mariana Islands chain in the Western Pacific. The indigenous people of the Marianas are Chamorro, and both islands were conquered by the Spanish in the wake of San Vitoris' death. And Matapang, when the chief was alive, his name meant strength, purity. Today, his name means something very different in Chamorro families.
Whenever you go to a rosary in Saipan or Guam, as a kid, you're supposed to go up and greet all of the elders there. You take their hand and you bring it up to your lips or your nose, and you say nyot for a guy and nyore for a woman. And it comes from like señor and señora. But if I were to fail to do that, if I were to be disrespectful to elders and not do what I was supposed to do, then they would say stop being so matapang, which basically means sort of insolent or rude or the opposite of cheerful and obedient, which you're expected to be.
One thing you are definitely not supposed to do in Guam is speak out against the church.
I am here to read a letter that I will personally deliver to him after reading it. Dear Archbishop Aparon.
Roy Quintanilla was the first person in recent memory to publicly accuse a priest on Guam of sexually abusing him. And he wasn't just accusing any priest. Archbishop Anthony Aparon had been the head of the church on Guam for three decades. A lot of people describe Aparon as the most powerful man on Guam, the kind of guy who could get politicians to do what he wanted just by making a phone call. But critics of Aparon found Quintanilla and convinced him to tell his story in May of 2016, in front of TV cameras, right across the street from where the archbishop lived.
I just curled up. I cried then, and I've never stopped crying.
Quintanilla said back when he was an altar boy and Aparon was still a priest, Aparon assaulted him. After Quintanilla's press conference, Aparon denied the allegations and accused him of lying. But Quintanilla's announcement opened the floodgates for others to come forward. Most of the accusations are about decades-old abuse.
Dora's conception was blinded by her faith.
You do not question the priest. And I was one of those parents, you do not question the priest.
He put his right arm around my shoulders and pulled me closer.
I didn't know what was going on. I didn't know what to do. I had nobody to turn to.
I could never forget his looks and the way he came to me.
It's just very heartbreaking, especially to have your parent, your grandmother not believe you, and the head of the priest not believe you.
The accusations were such a big deal that they were the topic of conversation among Chamorro families thousands of miles away.
I remember the summer that the accusations first surfaced against the archbishop. And that was the summer of one of my sister's weddings. And it was actually in Montana. So it was super far away from Guam. But there were a lot of people from Guam and Saipan there. And it was something that people were really talking about because it was such a big deal. I knew that it was this pivotal moment for the history of the islands there because the church had such a huge outsized influence for so long.
When the Spanish won dominion of the Marianas, they forcibly relocated Chamorros from across the island chain to Guam. They were resettled in villages, often reconstructed to have a church at the center of the community. Today, every village on Guam has a church. In an annual fiesta, where everyone goes to mass and pays respect to a patron saint, parishioners walk around the village singing and praying, and afterwards there's a huge feast, like this fiesta in Piti, in southern Guam. The importance of these festivals, the importance of the church and the community, it's something that a lot of people outside of Guam or Saipan might not get, even if they grew up in a religious family.
I guess for me, being Chamorro has always meant being Catholic. When I think of things that are Chamorro, they almost all revolve around the church.
That's Anita again.
It's really hard to explain your identity or your culture or your ethnicity to people. I mean, how often do you have to explain to somebody that you're American or what that actually means? But that was something I was kind of forced to do when I went to college on the East Coast, because it was very rare I actually met somebody who knew what Saipan was or the Mariana Islands, and even rarer that they knew what Chamorro was.
Explaining Chamorro culture is complicated by the history of colonization in the islands. Take hula in Hawaii, for example. It's one of the ways that Native Hawaiians have been able to hold on to their culture and their history. But in the Marianas, the Spanish stamped out traditional dance. Some people still speak Chamorro, but more than half of Chamorro words are now derived from Spanish.
This is one of those things that I had a hard time explaining when I was living in Boston, was how important the church was to people's lives. My mom's social life revolves around the church, and that's pretty typical for people. It's where you see your friends, it's where you see your family, it's where you grieve, it's where you celebrate. I mean, there's so many different sacraments. You're always celebrating. My dad has probably dozens of godsons. Like, you're always celebrating somebody's confirmation or christening or baptism. It's hard to really be a part of the community and feel connected to with everybody without going to church. I know somebody who's American and converted to Catholicism when she moved to Saipan because of the importance of it in people's lives.
So you can only imagine how much of a bombshell it must have been in a place like Guam to have not one, two, or three lawsuits filed against priests, but all of a sudden, dozens.
I get notifications when these civil lawsuits are filed, and so every week I would be like, wow, this is happening on Guam, and read about worse and worse allegations against more and more priests going back decades.
Decades. That's how long some of the victims kept their secrets, dealt with the shame and grief of staying silent. But now, so many are speaking out, it's like a dam has broken. Many people aren't sure what to believe.
Why didn't they claim that earlier? Why just now?
They want money, and it's always been about money. I mean, it's just, it's out of control.
There are certain markers that, you know, every defense lawyer looks for. And, you know, a lot of things that are missing from this case that create very big questions about the guilt of Archbishop Anthony, that they're just, the markers are absent of guilt.
What are those markers?
Well, I can't discuss those markers because then I'd be giving you my entire case. Which, fair enough, right? I mean, and that's the thing.
Which is why Anita went to Guam last summer, to talk to some of the victims, and to try and find out how this flood of accusations is impacting the community and the way that people practice their culture.
Oh man, this is gonna be my first time coming this far, or to be here, or even go up to my old house. You know, for so many years, and I was only doggone like that.
This is BJ, another person who's filed a sex abuse claim against the church for a decades-old case.
So we want to make a
left, yes.
Okay. He's showing Anita around Chalanpago, his childhood village in central Guam.
The store I used to go to play ping pong.
BJ is not comfortable being identified, so he hasn't given us his full name.
Look at the way the river is pulling down.
BJ takes Anita to a nearby river later in the day.
So this one here was on the side, right? So.
Bamboo stalks float in the muddy water. The mosquitoes are ferocious, but BJ ignores them.
He had me strapped in one of these trees like this. Then he tied both my feet, right? That's when everything changed.
He remembers hiding under a tree near his house for days after he was raped, praying to both the Christian God and Chamorro grandparents, whose spirits live in the jungle.
I was so naive, I even talked to our ancestors, Gwelu, help me, why is this sad, you know?
Gwela and Gwelu, he's talking to Chamorro ancestors. That's one part of Native culture that the Spanish were never able to stamp out. Anita wanted to know if abuse victims on Guam were turning to traditional practices as a way of healing, finding ways to practice their Chamorro culture outside of the church. But for a lot of the men Anita talked to, leaving Catholicism was never a question. BJ says he's gone to other churches to pray, but still comes back to the same parish. He still feels conflicted, though. He can't bring himself to go to confession.
I love that church, but I don't trust the priest.
BJ spoke out because he wanted to make sure no one else got hurt. But he still wonders whether he's doing the right thing.
If I die, right, and when the judgment day comes, you know, I don't know if the Lord might say, I'm wrong. I just want some closure, okay? If I'm gonna die, I'm gonna die knowing, you know, that I'll be living this world, that I live nothing but the truth.
The grief and shame of the accusations, they're raw open wounds right now. For the men coming forward and for people in the community, many of the accused priests are well known and often well-loved figures. The priests can be so close to families in the community that Anita's mom said finding out about the accusations against one of the priests felt like discovering a close cousin had committed murder.
I think I wasn't prepared for the level of emotion that would come out over the course of the interviews, given how long ago the abuse was. Generally, everybody I talked to said that they suffered from depression. They were less comfortable in social situations. They became withdrawn. Most of them said that they had tried to kill themselves or wanted to kill themselves. And this particular person, one of the things that stayed with me was he said that he wanted to kill himself, but that, you know, for Catholics, if you commit suicide, that means you go to hell and you can't be buried in the Catholic cemetery. And that would mean that on All Souls Day, every year, his family would go to their family plot and he wouldn't be there.
Many of the men Anita interviewed were in their 50s and 60s. They had waited until their parents or grandparents died before they went public with their abuse stories, trying to spare their devout elderly family members shock or shame.
It makes me wonder when I was hearing these stories about what stories were lost. Did this happen to people I knew? Did this happen to extended relatives? Or like, what would my grandmother have thought about this?
Speaking out as a sexual abuse victim is hard no matter where you live. But is there something about Chamorro history that makes it harder for people to stand up against priests?
There are many things that happen to the people here throughout our history that has affected them, the way that they behave and the way they make choices, the way they participate in life.
Patricia Taimenglo is a Chamorro psychologist, and she says you can't just look at what's happening on the island in a silo. Taimenglo says you have to look at the history of the island and the way its people have dealt with decades of war and colonization.
We're taught very early that children are not meant to be heard. You're meant to be present, but not heard. You definitely don't ask questions. You know, you don't challenge authority. Like for me, talking right now is something that another Chamorro may hear and say, Ayade, you know, Vanidosa, meaning she's just a show off. If you stand out, the rule is that you're going to be hammered down. You're going to be criticized.
Lots of the victims of sexual abuse who are speaking out now grew up on Guam right after the war. Their parents were part of a generation that survived the Japanese invasion and occupation of Guam. So many people starved and died during that 2.5-year period that locals now break up Guam's history into antes de guerra and después de guerra, before the war and after the war. Catholicism was a source of hope for people during those dark times. Families held onto rosary beads and prayed as they heard bombs going off around them. Chamorro women raped by Japanese soldiers promised to become nuns if their lives were spared. And here's where the history of Catholicism and Chamorro culture gets a little more complicated. At different points in the history of the Mariana Islands, the church has both suppressed native culture, but also protected it. Before the war, when Guam was under American military rule, children couldn't speak their native language at schools, but they could while they prayed. The church helped keep the language alive.
The church has been embedded so deeply within Chamorro identity and individual identity. For example, you would have somebody who would be agnostic, or maybe even an atheist, but they would still go to the functions, the churches, the masses, because it's tied and interwoven into the rituals that are such a deep part of our culture.
This is something several people suing the church told Anita. One man says he doesn't go to mass anymore, but still goes to novenas in honor of saints. Funerals, weddings, christenings, they all involve the church.
These are about these pivotal life events. So there's a lot of pressure to continue to participate, even if you don't believe in God, let alone if you believe in God, but you don't believe in the Catholic Church.
And maybe that's partly why it's been so hard for people to criticize the church. Time Anglo says the importance of shame, or mamatlau in Chamorro culture, could also make it hard for people to report abuse. Mamatlau is something a lot of people talked about with Anita, including Charlene Santos Bamba, a professor at the University of Guam. In a nod to how small of a place Guam is, she turned out to also have a very personal connection to the abuse cases.
My research deals with Chamorro culture, women, and the influences of the church in terms of the relationships to the Chamorro family. But coincidentally, just so you know, Roy is my uncle.
Roy Quintaniza, the first man to publicly accuse Archbishop Aparon of abuse.
And it was just funny because I had mentioned to him that I was going to do an interview today and there was someone from Hawaii, and he's like, oh, that's Anita.
Living on a small island leads to lots of coincidental run-ins like this. But Bamba says it's also played a role in the development of Chamorro culture and the importance of mamatlau, shame.
And there really is no separating a lot of times. And so things can get very political, right? We have to be very careful, I think, a lot of times in terms of ensuring that we're not bringing shame to our family or bringing shame to someone else or making anyone feel bad. You know, we worry a lot about hurt feelings, and we don't want to hurt people's feelings. But I think more so why it took so long. I don't know if it's just Catholicism. I think, you know, it's Chamorro culture and this idea of shame and not bringing shame to the self or to the family or bringing shame to others and keeping things silent. And I think that's a big part of it.
That might all be changing, though. Because there's a new wave of Chamorros, a younger generation that's more outspoken. Patricia Timenglo, the psychologist, says they're part of a shift in the culture that empowers people to stand up.
They're very bicultural, but very American in their thinking. And so they're not weighted down by the rules and shame as much as people who are maybe 40 years old, 30 years old and above.
And they're re-examining their history. And figures like Chief Matapang. Today, more people are seeing him not as rude or insolent, but as someone brave. Someone who stood up and fought for freedom. This younger, freer generation might make for a very different Guam in the future. A Guam that we're already seeing a glimpse of in the huge controversies within the church. Even before the abuse allegations, people were starting to criticize the Archbishop's decisions in a way they simply wouldn't have 2 decades ago. Anita wanted to know what younger Chamorros on Guam think about what's happening with the church. So she reached out to Chamorro activist Eva Agon Cruz. Here's Anita.
Cruz is a Chamorro language teacher and an activist. In a nod to just how small the Mariana Islands are, I called her up for an interview with no idea that she's actually my distant cousin.
I think for our generation, you know, when we became American, the kind of importance and the dominance of Catholicism in our lives, it wasn't as intense.
Cruz is Catholic and is even a tetza, somebody who leads rosaries. But she says being Chamorro to her is about more than just going to church. It's about the land. It's about being with your family.
We go and we gather with our families, and we're constantly surrounded by love and by the people that we love and constantly eating good food.
She said the younger generation on Guam have been looking for new ways to be Chamorro and to reconnect with their culture away from the church. The Spanish might have stamped out traditional dance, but Cruz says that there are people who are working to create new types of dances and chants. They're even celebrating a new annual holiday, an annual pilgrimage to the site of Guam's traditional creation story.
So we had to come back and really look deep into our history and question, what did we believe before the Spanish came? How did we practice? Like, who did we worship, right? What did that look like?
Cruz says it's surprising to the older generation. When she first started to chant, her dad asked, what are you chanting for?
It's really about finding the balance. I don't go to church on Sundays, but I do wake up every morning and I have my rituals where I give thanks for all of the blessings in my life and I ask for guidance. And, you know, I'm praying to God and I'm also praying to our ancestors.
Guam today is a lot more developed than it used to be a few decades ago. And I think it's kind of cool that in the face of all of this modernization, people are finding old and new ways to be Chamorro. They aren't losing Native identity. They're rediscovering ways to express their culture. But I can't help but think of a t-shirt I saw when I was on Guam. Católico hasta y fin a tiempo. It means Catholic until I die. And I think it represents how a lot of people across generations still feel about the church.
We're not downgrading the church. We're not against the church.
That's Roy's brother, Anthony Quintaniza. Their younger brother, Peter, died of cancer a year ago. In Chamorro culture, the family gathers for an anniversary rosary a year after the death. And that's where we are right now, listening to Roy's niece, Charlene, leading prayers in her role as a tetza, or prayer leader.
Holy Mary, Mother of God, pray for us sinners now at the hour of our death. Amen.
Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with
you. Roy's immediate family sits on floral couches and plastic lawn chairs around a red and white altar covered with photos of Peter and other family members who've passed away. A few dozen more people sit outside around white tables, ready to jump up and start serving a huge meal with empanadas, lumpia, and red rice.
I hope you guys brought your appetite, too, tonight. And stuff.
Anita is standing next to Anthony in the line for food. She wants to know whether Roy's revelation caused him to question his faith.
So seeing his story and all these lawsuits, it doesn't affect your faith?
Hell no, it doesn't. No, God is still God. The Catholics are still Catholic, and their teachings are all about good. I'm still Catholic, and I will die Catholic.
Even though the people suing the church experienced a lot of pain, many of them say they don't blame the church. Some of them, like BJ, pine for Antigu, the old days when Guam was simpler and kids were more respectful.
I was surprised to see that they turned to the church. Some of them said that they had confided in other priests and that that had helped, or that they continued to pray and that helps.
That's something that seems to have stayed constant. Despite the centuries of colonization, despite war, Chamorros on Guam still value the importance of family. That loyalty and respect for their ancestors is what once made people reject Catholicism. But now, that's part of what's keeping people in the church.
I mean, I think that outsiders look at Catholicism on Guam and they kind of say, like, oh, that's so sad. You lost your culture and you are just so colonized.
And Anita points out, it is sad how much has been lost. That's part of the tragedy of colonization. But that's not the whole story.
A lot of people there don't feel like they lost their culture. It's just changed, you know, and that they're proud to be Chamorro and Catholic. That's part of who they are, and the flavor of Catholicism that's practiced there is very different from other places. And the culture there is flourishing in the form that it is now. And so, you know, while you do have activists who want to go back to the way it was before, you have a lot of people who are, this is the Chamorro culture that my grandparents practiced. I even asked one person who's a Chamorro historian as well as a priest, I said, you know, what does it mean to be Chamorro to you? And he said,
being Chamorro is simply being what my grandmother was. So whatever she was, I try to be. Knowing that she had her own life, she had her own times. I have my own life and I live in my own times. But I try to live as much as I can from what she gave me.
And so they're continuing to practice the faith and the culture that was handed down to them. I did feel very homesick writing the piece.
Anita says that reporting this story wasn't easy, but it made her realize something about herself that she didn't expect.
I felt like all the people who helped me by like letting me interview them and speaking to me about their experience and their relationship with church or being Chamorro, they helped me find a way to articulate this relationship between the culture and the religion that even in my own personal life, I've had trouble articulating to people who are close to me, because I feel like oftentimes culture and religion are separated. And to me, the line is just like so blurry there.
You've been listening to Offshore, stories from Hawaii and sometimes the Pacific Rim. I'm Jessica Terrell. This story was reported by Anita Hofschneider and produced by Emily Dugdale and the Offshore team. Offshore's producer is April Esterlan. Our executive producer is Patty Epler. Offshore is produced by Honolulu Civil Beat, a nonprofit news organization in Hawaii. You can find more of our stories, including Anita's coverage of the abuse cases on Guam, at civilbeat.org.